everybody. Happy Father's Day. Welcome to our first episode of Parties Aside with your hosts and soon-to-be favorite sisters. My name's Corey.
And I'm Bailey.
A little bit about the pod that we're starting. We just feel like we wanted to start this because today, even so, it's been 5 months into the Trump presidency, and ask ourselves on a daily basis,
how did this happen?
And one thing we want more of is understanding from all sides of the political spectrum, not just where we may naturally stand, mm-hmm. as far as what people think, what they believe, and how we can bridge any gaps of understanding
I think the first step to all this divisiveness that we have is stopping to try to understand what motivates other people and basically just trying to understand where other people are coming from. You read Breitbart News? Why?
Right, exactly. I think that's the main problem America's facing now. We just want to try and see things from all sides because we want to understand where everyone is coming from on their thoughts. And if I'm not understanding something, I want to know what I'm missing. Exactly. And I would think that other people would want the same. I mean, I may be wrong, but I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, in the future, we hope to speak with other guests from different places on the political spectrum, all across different views.
Right. Today's episode, we're going to focus on breaking down some of the major key points of the House version of the American Health Care Act, since the Senate is choosing to not discuss with the American people what they are writing.
But I would just like to point out that the bill is not a major key.
Right. Agreed with that. Pull up a copy of the House bill.
Because regardless, it's going to affect everyone.
Exactly.
Not everyone's going to lose their health insurance. A lot of people will if this bill passes the way it is written now. But regardless, it doesn't matter. Everyone will be affected by this. Either your premiums will go up, your premiums will go down. You could lose coverage.
Not to mention, this bill affects 1/6 of the American economy. And they're trying to pass it through the Senate now without any discussion on it, any debate.
No hearings.
No amendments submitted. You know, that's not even saying that just Democrats want the chance to look at it. What if there's other Republicans out there who want a chance? I don't think 13 Republicans can speak for their entire party, let alone the entire country. You know, there should be a little more debate on this subject.
Ted Cruz is one of those men writing the Senate bill, and he is our senator. I don't think he's going in there with Bailey Euford's best interests at heart.
I'm going to be upfront on this. I am not a fan of Ted Cruz. I'll say that now because I just don't think that will be easy for me to mask for anyone. So I think Ted Cruz represents whatever motive will elevate him in his political career. That being said, I think that a lot of people paid attention to Ted Cruz in this election more than they ever have. And I feel he made Texas look like a fool, in my opinion.
We are not fools. Care Act, a.k.a. wealth care, a.k.a. Trump care.
Yeah.
I think one of the big things about this that I'm not a huge fan of is they're rolling back Medicaid expansion by 2020.
Yeah, so if you get a chance to look at this health bill, definitely are giving the states their rights to roll back Medicaid, and that includes creating stipulations where people, if they want to be on Medicaid, they have to prove they're working. That doesn't really take into consideration. There's a lot of people who may qualify for Medicaid now who cannot work. They just cannot. They may have a disability.
So the Medicaid work requirements say that you do not have to have the requirement. It's waived for you if you're a pregnant woman, the sole parent or caretaker of a child younger than 6 or a child with disabilities, you're younger than 19 or you're younger than 20 and you're married or you're head of a household. If the Medicaid work requirement was on a case-by-case level, I would be okay with it.
I agree. That would be a good suggestion to be submitted for that because
Mr. Speaker?
Yeah, because otherwise that's going to exclude a lot of people. I mean, they're trying to include a lot of broad generalizations, and as we've said time and time again, healthcare cannot ever be put in any kind of broad generalization. That's a huge issue.
Well, I think that we agree with Paul Ryan on that Paul Ryan can never be mandated by the federal government in a broad way like this bill does. And
right.
I'll be the first person to concede that the Affordable Care Act has its issues, but this is not the way to go.
No, I agree. And if there were positive changes that they wanted to make on the Affordable Health Care Act, of course, anything to improve it, anybody would be open to. But this new repeal and reform that they're trying to pass through the Senate now, it's not going to help more people. It's only going to hurt more people.
Right. Well, you mentioned repeal and replace, and I don't think that's new at all. Know it's not.
Right.
But the point is that they ran on repeal and replace for 8 years now. So you can't. Now the base is saying you said you were going to repeal and replace.
Right.
But, you know, a lot of people don't know what's going on.
I mean, another huge issue with this healthcare bill is these Medicaid caps. So like we were discussing earlier, if the state gets an allotted amount of money for Medicaid and they end up spending more than their allotted amount from the federal budget, their budget will get cut for the following year. And I don't really understand the logic on that. I mean, to me, that sounds like a punishment of the state.
It's either you don't give people their Medicaid money to get healthcare, or you like lose your coverage for the next year. Like, that's just so backwards to me. I don't think any governor is going to overspend unless he or she has to.
Right. Like, exactly.
I don't think.
Yeah. And that's just putting our state leaderships in very difficult positions where then in turn, they're going to have to answer to their constituents. And what are they supposed to say? You know?
Right.
What are they have no control over this. And it's the state's going to continue to just, the conditions of the state are just going to continue to deteriorate and get worse and worse with this type of mandate. It's just, I just don't understand the logic behind it.
I think a lot of this bill boils down to the line of logic of, we're giving it back to the states, but it's not always the best way.
Well, it's not, I mean, I understand giving, like, I understand that that's a widely accepted positive view. We're giving the states control. And you would think, who would know the state's conditions and needs more than the state government? But when you put these type of mandates, it's not, maybe not increasing, never giving them an increase. If your state's continually overspending, maybe keeping it at that and telling them, you guys need to rework. You need to figure it out. Help that state figure out how to rework, how to better spend their dollars, what they've got.
Right.
I mean, that is an acceptable plan, but to take more money away from them makes no sense. You're just hurting more people.
When I say giving it back to the states is not the best idea, I mean, because in this scenario, states would no longer be mandated to cover essential health benefits. And I understand some people may be wary of anything, of the states being mandated to do anything concerning healthcare, but essential health benefits are ambulatory services, emergency services, hospitalization, maternity and newborn care, mental health and substance abuse disorder services, prescription drugs, rehab, lab services, and preventative and wellness services, and anything pediatrics.
I mean, listen to that list.
That's so much. Like, that's the vast majority.
That is the, I would say, the almost the entire list of all the things that you would need. Like, that's all should be general coverage.
And I'm afraid Greg Abbott would say, okay, insurance providers, you don't have to cover that. Scott Walker has already said he would say insurance providers don't have to cover essential health benefits.
Right. Where does that leave your people? Only sicker and needing more?
I just want to say that they do increase funds by 2020 by $15 billion for maternity coverage, newborn care, and mental health and substance abuse. That's just $15 billion for all of those services
by
2020. Premiums will go up for the elderly, especially. The bill increases the ratio by which health insurance premiums can vary by age from 3-to-1 to 5-to-1.
Which, what if you haven't saved? What if these people can't work because they just can't? I mean, where does that leave them?
I mean, not even if they can't work. Like, people who have worked their whole lives should be able to retire and not have to worry about if they can afford basic healthcare. And it is important to mention that in this section, in the same section that it talks about the ratios, it does state that members of Congress are exempt from these health plans.
Which is just sick. If you
I think it says a lot.
Well, no one can explain this logic to me in a way that will make it okay. If you don't like the health bill for your own personal self, how are you going to approve and mandate that for literally every other person in this nation?
Members of Congress are serving. We applaud their service for making our laws and helping our country run. But why wouldn't you write a healthcare bill that you like and you would be okay with being mandated by?
Because eventually you're not going to be a member of Congress. So what happens then? You know? I mean, are you going to be upset about your healthcare bill when you can't get your exempt coverage or exempt whatever anymore, you know?
Let's talk about the tax credit. The basis of the Affordable Care Act is that it's paid for, essentially, a lot of it is paid for by the individual mandate, and people don't like the individual mandate, and I can see why. But Paul Ryan's plan will repeal the individual mandate, and that's part of this bill, and will use tax credits to subsidize insurance costs. Which, okay, I could be for that.
Yeah, but
one thing is that if you're a family, the maximum amount anyone can get per family is $14,000 a year. And so, like, if you're an individual, you get less than that. And for most people, that would be okay. But a lot of people, you know, what happens if...
What if you have a terminal illness or...
Right.
What if you have cancer and you...
Well, you know, Mitch McConnell saw the fury that happened after the first draft of the healthcare bill was released in the House, the one that Paul Ryan canceled the vote for. So I think that's a big reason why he's trying to make this process as secretive as possible. And he wants to get a vote before the July 4th recess. So the senators don't go home to their town halls and face that again. Because people are still just as angry. And I think it's still so important to talk to your senators and members of Congress.
Right. Even if you don't feel like it's going to make a difference because you may be in a historically red or historically blue state, you still should be calling and speaking up for what you believe in because they need to know this. Because if anything, if they don't know anything else, they need to be listening to these phone calls, to these letters, to the people that they meet on the street. You need to hear this.
Ted Cruz and I might not agree on very much, but at the end of the day, he and John Cornyn are elected to represent us. And we might not be the majority, but, you know, I think in this case, most Texans, I don't remember the exact study, but most Texans don't like this healthcare bill.
Right.
Like the Texas Tribune and the University of Texas just released a poll, and I think, so 3% of Texans surveyed said that the healthcare legislation was very favorable. 17% said somewhat favorable. 15% said somewhat unfavorable, and 36% said very unfavorable. And then 22% were in the middle saying neither favorable nor unfavorable. Well, and that was a Texas Tribune / University of Texas poll. So, you know, that just goes to show. Ted Cruz is writing this legislation, so I hope he would keep that in mind. Because Ted Cruz is one of those 13 senators working on this behind closed doors with Mitch McConnell.
Right. And with Texas being one of the, I mean, it's the second largest state in terms of size and population. Mm-hmm. That's a large percentage of people in this country is going to be affected by that.
Right.
So, especially I know with the way our population breakout as well in Texas is. So, I think another point that you discussed earlier is the CBO says 130 million Americans have pre-existing conditions and the bill gives $8 billion over 5 years to cover high-risk pools. Also, $100 billion is given to states. So, I mean, in terms of people, 130 million Americans for $8 billion, I mean...
I would like to point out that that's a rough estimate.
Yeah.
By the Congressional Budget Office, which is contrary to some people, like Tom Price, is nonpartisan. Right. I think the current CBO director was appointed by a Republican.
Yeah.
So, to suggest that the CBO is any kind of political, or to suggest that the CBO would give unfavorable ratings or scores to anything just right. because of politics is just, I think, blatantly untrue.
Totally agree with you. And I know that some sources have tried to make that argument, but I, like you said, at a Republican appointed, I think it was, he was Republican appointed. So you can't really argue on that. I think that these statistics are the truth. I mean, that's just my opinion. And also in my opinion, that doesn't make any sense to me. That's not nearly enough money to help these people. I mean, leaving people out in the dirt, like, basically, you know?
Right. 130 million Americans is, that's a rough estimate by the CBO, but that's also, they say, about 1 in 2 Americans. So that's almost half of America has a pre-existing condition. Almost everyone I know has some kind of pre-existing condition.
It's going to affect people on an everyday basis.
Right.
In your daily life. And you know what? You might not have a pre-existing condition now, but you might just not know it. So what happens to you when you find out and it's too late? Your insurance won't cover you and you have no help. I feel like it's just cruel. We're essentially letting people know, like, their lives don't matter. And it doesn't matter if you make it
or not. What the bill does to people with pre-existing conditions is it puts them in high-risk pools so that their insurance will be different than people who do not have pre-existing conditions. And the logic behind that is that if you do not have a pre-existing condition,
you
shouldn't have to pay for someone who does.
Right.
That's what I'm getting from the bill. Whether Paul Ryan meant it that way or not, that's what this bill says.
Right.
And I think that $8 billion over 5 years being allotted to people in the high-risk pools will not cover it. And it's also fair to note that there's $100 billion that it's giving to states, will be given to states by the federal government. Mm-hmm. And some of that would likely be used for people with pre-existing conditions.
Yeah.
But, you know, people who have pre-existing conditions shouldn't have to guess about whether their health will be insured or not.
Right, because for most of these people with pre-existing conditions, your health can change on a dime. I mean, you might, from one day to the next, you might not know if you need an emergency surgery or a medicine that's cost thousands of dollars a month, you know, and just to live, just to get better. I mean, what if you're a mom and you've got a family that you need to support? Or what if you know, you have something running, like a pre-existing condition that runs in your family, and then all of a sudden you find out you have it. You knew it may have been coming, but all up until that day, you had no signs that say that you have that. Then what? What do you do? How do you plan your life around that?
I just wanted to talk about the tax credit and the mandate. So last thing about the tax credit is that it's important to note that if your insurance provider covers abortion, other than abortions necessary to save the life of the mother, or abortions with respect to a pregnancy that is the result of an act of rape or incest, you are not eligible for a tax credit.
Even if you've never had the abortion. Even if you've never used those services.
If your insurance covers abortion, you do not get a tax credit. So that will inevitably create a domino effect.
Even so, no matter what your opinion is, I mean, you can be somebody who is against abortion, but it's not your choice if your insurance provider covers that or not. So
exactly.
When you elect your insurance, what happens then? You know, like, what if you need that tax credit? You've never needed an abortion or you've never had one. You're then therefore affected by, I mean, it's just, honestly, it's affecting women. I mean, how does this...
I mean, it can affect not even just women. You could be a man and you could not know that your insurance provider covers abortions, and you could be...
You're right,
you could find out later after the fact, after you've had some kind of surgery or even a doctor's visit that costs more than you need to. Find out you won't get a tax credit because your insurance provider covers abortion. Interesting to note that the bill does repeal the 10% excise tax on indoor tanning services.
Yeah, I don't know if some people understand, but the original theory behind this is that obviously indoor tanning will lead to more instances of cancer.
Right.
And the object was is to kind of make a deterrent on that, make it a little bit more expensive for people to tan, so that way they'd be less inclined to do it and therefore try and reduce the instance of skin cancer or other kinds of cancer. And for the legislative body to be saying that they want that this bill is going to help more people and they're trying to help more people, I don't really understand the logic behind taking away that tax, because it's just going to make it easier for people to tan again and then therefore increase the instances of cancer again. So I don't really understand it.
Yeah, I was genuinely puzzled by this. Like, it's not a political
thing. It's such
thing
a minor thing. Like, you would think that it's a 10% tax on tanning. I mean, I don't think the vast majority of Americans tan anyway. So what are they really gaining from this? I mean, maybe I'm wrong. We don't know. You used to. I mean, I did use to tan, but I care about my body now. So I'm trying not to do that.
Right.
But
I just think it's indisputable that indoor tanning increases your chance of being diagnosed with melanoma or something.
I mean, that's science. I know a lot of people want to debate science nowadays, but that is science.
Right. So I think that the excise tax of 10% would serve to sort of push you away from wanting to tan.
Right.
Because wouldn't it save more money in the long run? I don't know. Maybe it's a freedom.
That's what I'm saying.
Maybe it's a First Amendment thing. You have the right to tan without an excise tax. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe we missed that part.
Maybe Paul Ryan secretly really likes to go indoor tanning.
Right.
You can't tell from looking at him.
Well, I mean, maybe all the people in Long Island or New Jersey who supposedly tan, you know, maybe they are, they're going to be a little upset about this, but I can't speak to those.
Paul Ryan doesn't represent them. Let's not try to fathom Paul Ryan's thoughts.
Right, exactly. There's just no train on that logic.
All right, so. And then I think the last big thing is why Jon Favreau calls it wealth care.
And you'll find this out soon enough, but we are very huge fans of Pod Save America.
We are friends of the pod.
We are friends of the pod, so if they listen to this ever, we would be so gracious. I'm so excited to know that. But we do love the term wealth care. I mean, it's already being adopted in other places, so I can assure you we are going to continue to use it.
And we're going to continue to credit Jon Favreau.
Right, of course.
He's doing amazing. So there is a section in the bill that, and I'm quoting from the bill, repeals a provision that prohibits certain health insurance providers from deducting remuneration paid to an officer, director, or employee in excess of $500,000. The CBO, the section repeals the 3.8% tax on the net investment and income of individuals, estates, and trusts with incomes above specified amounts. So,
break it down for us.
What this means is that if you make more than $500,000, your taxes are going down. And I guess we can debate the merits of trickle-down economics all day.
Right.
Shortcut, there aren't any. But this is just bizarre to me.
I don't think it's that bizarre. I mean, when you look at the people who, I mean, I don't want to say that people didn't, you know, people voted for these politicians to put them in office, but I think their true motives are really being revealed here in this bill.
Right.
And, you know, that being said, it makes a lot of sense to me that I don't think it's right, but it makes a lot of sense to me that these people are including lines in this document that will cut taxes for people with that much income. I mean, of course, they think that, like you said, trickle-down economics. They believe that putting more money into the hands of the people who already have the most money in this country is going to stimulate growth. But I think we all know that that's oftentimes not the case. People with the most money at the top of the pyramid tend to keep more money for themselves.
Right. And I just don't think a 3.8% tax is, you know, if you're Warren Buffett, I don't think a 3.8% tax is really hurting you.
Right. I mean, 3.8% out of 500,000 is nothing. I mean,
look, I'm not a math major, but I don't think that's very much.
Right. It's nothing that will affect them that much. I guess when you get to the millions and billions of dollars people make, sure, I'm sure you're going to get a little stingy with that. That tends to be a little bit more. But, I mean, I really don't see the benefits of this. And if trickle-down economics had been a tried and proven thing in the past, of course, I would believe it. But I don't believe it. And because it has been tried and it has not been proven. It is not going to work this way.
Well, I don't think the Affordable Care Act is the most amazing thing that's ever happened. Like, yeah. I don't think anyone could argue that it doesn't have its problems and it couldn't be improved and fixed. It's not the end-all solution to healthcare by any means.
Right.
But running on repeal and replace for 8 years and then coming up with this is just outrageous to me, because you guys have had 8 years and this has been your main platform. Repeal and replace, repeal and replace. We've heard it a million times. And this is what you give us. This is what you come up with.
Exactly.
And I mean, also, I think we should stress that this is not the end all here, because we don't know what's going on in the Senate. We have no idea what Mitch McConnell is doing.
Right. If you don't know it now, you'll know. Mitch McConnell can be pretty divisive and pretty sneaky with what he's doing.
If you don't know, now you know.
So, actually, to touch on that, so, like we've said, they're currently, this bill is in the Senate, and there's 13 men. Well, as two women here, we will say, it's very unnerving that 13 men, especially in conservative views, are writing this bill in secret, and we don't know what is going to be in it. And I only say that because I don't think an old white guy knows exactly what I want for my healthcare, you know? And that's not to say anything about an old white guy, but like, you're not a woman. You don't know my experiences. You don't know what I'd want. And there's not even any consultation for women on this.
I just want to say, this is, okay, first of all, this is not us being crazy, man-hating feminists. Like, this is not that at all. What woman can say that she's comfortable with 13 men legislating what her healthcare coverage will be like? And also, imagine what would happen if the roles reversed. I want to know what man would be comfortable with 13 women writing healthcare legislation.
If those 13 men could label the anatomy of female body parts for me,
it'd be different.
I'd feel a little bit better. We're not feminist man haters, but I think everyone just wants the chance to be represented, and just, it's very upsetting that we're not.
I just don't think it's a crazy, bizarre notion for us to want to have a woman.
Even if I were Republican woman, even if a...
And it's not about party.
Right, exactly.
Party doesn't matter.
Right.
It's about, I'm a woman and I should be represented in this healthcare debate.
Yes, exactly. Just like I don't think I could speak for a man. I don't think I could go and write a bill, a healthcare bill, and speak for a man. I don't know. I don't know most of the general healthcare issues that face a man through his phases of life. I couldn't tell you.
I mean, maybe we should, but
don't. Right, exactly. Maybe we should. That's the whole point of this. We should all be educating ourselves on each other. If we want any of this partisanship to end, we want to bridge any gaps, we need to start speaking and understanding each other and just giving other side a chance. There's all this talk about being in your bubble, especially on social media and on the internet. You might visit the same sites every day, or, you know, you see on your Twitter feed, you see the same type of news feed coming through, but people really need to reach outside of their comfort zones and just take a chance. Read an article on a news source that you are not familiar with, or, you know, step outside your bounds, because otherwise, how are you going to make anything better for anybody if you're just worried about yourself? That's the problem. People are just focused on themselves and what they want. And that's not right. That's not the America we live in. That's not what we stand for. We're all about inclusivity, right? I mean,
I just want to say that was beautiful. And also, I really love that you took a conversation about genitals into a greater message.
Yeah. I'm really on point today, I think.
I love that.
Thank you.
You did amazing. I agree with you 100%.
Yeah.
Like, you really connected that to the greater theme of what we're doing here.
Yeah, I mean, I do. I'm just an everyday person. I'm not involved in politics. I don't have any, you know, I work an office job. I'm a student. I go to school. And I'm just speaking on how I feel as an everyday person. And then that's kind of what we want with this podcast is right. We want everyday people to realize that it's not just about the big guys up there. Like, we need to all work together at the bottom level, at the lowest levels of life. We need to all be more inclusive in understanding of everything around.
And I also think that it's so obvious, but so easy to forget, that those 435 members of the House of Representatives and those 100 senators work for us. They are supposed to answer to us. Their job is to do what their constituents want.
By the way, well heard, if you ever hear this, I am glad you didn't vote for the healthcare bill. I appreciate that. No, I agree with you. And that's another thing too. I mean, everyday people listening need to realize that we hold the power. We really do. These people are voted into office. So, you know what? If you really are upset, maybe you should think about that. Maybe you shouldn't vote straight party tickets.
Well, you can't do that in Texas anymore.
Right. That's true.
And I'm very for that. I love that the governor sent that into law.
Yeah, exactly. Because people need to wake up. They need to realize that, I know politics is humdrum and it's not interesting to some people, but when it comes down to, if you're unhappy about something, you've got to start paying attention.
I don't think it matters if you think politics is humdrum, to use your eloquent vocabulary. Right. I love that. It affects your everyday life.
But I think a lot of people just are like, oh, I don't want to get involved. That's too much for me. And like, I get it. It's dramatic.
Oh yeah.
It's draining. I get tired of looking up. I get tired of reading the news.
You and I know, talk about this almost every day, how
exhausting.
exhausting. I think we use the word exhausting with each other almost every day about how tiring it can be.
Right.
But, like, this affects our everyday lives. I mean, not just this healthcare bill, politics in general, you know?
Right.
The president, you know, tweeting at 3 a.m. That affects us.
Right. Like, and hopefully this podcast will be something that maybe people can look at and have a more condensed way of taking something in and realizing what's going on. You know, you don't have to be reading all these news articles, but we just want people to know what's going on, and we want to know why people like what's going on or why they don't. We really have to focus on that.
Final thoughts, but not like Tommy Lahren.
So, about the Senate bill and the voting process. So, we already know the 13 guys, they're in the back. They're working on it behind closed doors, very hush-hush. So, you know, I've been trying to figure out, you know, what exactly the process is going to be as far as how will this get voted on, you know, what's going to happen. And so far, we all know Mitch McConnell's kind of sneaky, and that's just, hey, I think everyone would agree on that. Republican, Democrat, whatever.
That's not always necessarily a bad thing.
Not a bad thing. He's a very smart guy.
I agree.
Mitch very McConnell, calculated.
I think on Pod Save America, someone said that Mitch McConnell is as smart as Paul Ryan thinks Paul Ryan is, and I think that's very astute.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Apparently, there's a way that Mitch McConnell may introduce this bill, and only the lowest amount of time we would get to view, discuss our, and I say we as in our elected officials. And they're looking at maybe only 2 or 4 hours total, including debate, of assessing and looking at this Senate health bill. So I'm going to read to you from Andy Slavitt, which is a senior editor on USA Today. He tweeted a while back about a process that McConnell might be using. McConnell's aiming to have a few holdups figured out by tomorrow, and then they're going to send the text to the CBO for a score. They could still work on more in the proposal for the bill as the CBO scores it. Mitch McConnell will put a nothing bill on the 26th, which contents are irrelevant because they're using it as an excuse to wait out the required 20 hours they have to debate a bill. The required 20 hours is the minimum there is to debate a bill in the Senate. So here's why the nothing bill matters. The very last amendment on the bill, on the nothing bill, will be what's called a substitute amendment. Mitch McConnell will propose this amendment, and it will effectively cancel out the entire nothing bill that's already has been debated on for so many hours. And in place, it's going to put a brand new text that no one has ever read, which will be the finalized AHCA bill, American Healthcare Act. So that finalized text will have several different aspects in it that has never been seen or never been spoken of with the entire body of the Senate. And at that point, they will not need to debate. It says there will the final bill, they will not need to debate it since it's already been the required 20-hour minimum on the first nothing bill. They will, however, need a CBO score, which they may already have in hand. This opens up the door for a vote on the 27th, but most likely the 28th. They will vote on a bill that hasn't been vetted by the economy, the medical field, or more importantly, hasn't been read by any Senate. So that tells you something. I don't know what does. And another important note to this is I read earlier this week that Mitch McConnell has denied meetings with American Heart Association, American Diabetes Association, several highly accredited medical bodies.
I think the American Dime Association.
Exactly. They've been requesting meetings with him for the next 2 weeks, anytime, literally anytime that he may have available. They are willing to speak with him on the advocacy for their people who are going to be affected by this bill, and Mitch McConnell is refusing all meetings because he is insanely busy writing this bill, apparently. So, I mean, it's a little scary. Honestly, this scenario
scares me the most is that Mitch McConnell cares. I don't really know what he cares about. I don't know why he's doing it.
Right. What is his motivation?
We have talked about this extensively, you and I, on the pod. Why is it so important to Mitch McConnell to force this bill through without debate, without the American people or his constituents knowing, without meeting with the American Medical Association? Is it really all just political? Is he all doing it just for the president? Because, you know, that just doesn't make sense to me. It just is so bizarre.
Right. I can't figure out what the ulterior motive would be.
But here's the thing. Sorry to interrupt you.
No.
Here's the thing. You have the majority. Like, what do you have to lose?
Right. Exactly.
You have the majority. If you would write a bill, if you would write a bill in public and let us see what was happening, Mitch McConnell doesn't have anything to lose. He'll pass the bill. He has a majority.
It's scary to me because all these things are true. He doesn't need
repulsive. And so I think that's about all we have on healthcare for now. We will be anxiously watching in the upcoming weeks to see if the text is released / when will it be released, and hearings, and what the vote looks like. Let's talk about some news that happened this week.
I think first up, we should talk about the congressional baseball game and the shooting that event occurred.
This should not be political.
No, definitely. I agree. It should and make me very upset. But it is upsetting that it is being kind of turned into a political...
By the right and the left.
Yeah, I agree. Both sides are definitely turning this into almost a he said, she said kind of thing where, you know, it's one side's fault and the other side's fault. And it's just kind of sickening. I mean, I think the bottom line here is that at the end of the day, the American people are upset. And I think that this is a very sad manifestation of that. And I'm upset that anybody would get shot and hurt. Like, that's very upsetting.
I think that the narrative is that people on the left want to take away everyone's guns. And, like, I don't think that's true. I think that...
Right.
If you're a law-abiding citizen, what do you have to lose by Congress passing mandatory background checks?
Right, exactly. Or what does anybody have to lose by mandating that you need to be of a certain mental stability to have a gun? I mean, I just think that that is very important. That's very important. And to downplay that for political gain or for monetary gain is just sickening. And, you know, I would hope that this incident drives it home. There does need to be some change because as of today, things are only getting worse. And that's why it's finally happening to leadership. And they are seeing that.
Let's talk about the president's tweets.
Yeah.
So June 16th.
Which tweet?
Let's talk about June 16th. So that was Friday. I quote, "I am being investigated for firing the FBI director by the man who told me to fire the FBI director! Witch hunt." Yeah. He capitalized witch and hunt. And there was no, not to comment on grammar, but there was no period or anything after witch hunt. Maybe he ran out of, maybe that was the 140 character right. limit. So this, I just think my overlying question about this is, why is he implicating Rod Rosenstein? Is it Rosenstein or Rosenstein?
I think it's Rosenstein, but I'm not too sure. But that is a good question. I think at this point, it's just anybody to point the finger. I mean, anybody and everybody could get cut from Trump's
The tweeting
circle.
Is just exhausting.
Yeah.
You know, what was it? The White House Correspondents Dinner when Obama got the anger interpreter
yeah.
a couple of years ago? I think the president needs one, but for his tweets. Because it's just so exhausting when everyone from the White House is saying different things constantly.
Right.
Like just, what was it? This morning on the State of the Union, Jake Tapper, the president's lawyer, one of the president's lawyers said that he's not being investigated.
Right. So I think the key point here is that there is no interpreting the president's tweets because the White House is supposed to be doing that. And we're getting mixed messages all over the place. So who really knows? Honestly, it's hard for me to understand if I should be paying attention to his tweets or if I should just ignore them. I mean, anytime he tweets something, he's fueling a whole nother fire. I mean, and he thinks that he's not. But like, you tweet something that incriminates yourself almost on a daily basis.
Right. I think maybe you would think that maybe he would have learned, or maybe he would have understood, like, his tweets do have a greater meaning. They were used against him for the travel ban case in the Supreme
Court. I don't think that's hit home. I genuinely don't think so.
He argued, the whole argument of the travel ban, regardless of whether you agree with it or not, the argument in place by the president and his supporters was that it's not a ban. But then he called it a ban on Twitter, and that basically invalidated his entire legal argument.
Right.
That's why the Ninth Circuit?
Yeah, it was Cuba. Let's talk about Cuba.
Sorry, Beyonce. No more Cuba vacays. Can't take the twins.
I think this whole, so in case you missed it, Trump decided that we are going to re-tighten up our relations with Cuba because apparently he doesn't think we're getting the fair end of some sort of deal, but...
A lot of what he said was human rights. He doesn't think that Cuba upholds human rights standards. But as you also pointed out to me when we were talking about this the other day, not too long ago, Rex Tillerson, Secretary of State, said we are not going to base who we deal with based on their human rights records
anymore. Right, and proceed to sell billions of dollars to the Saudis, or sell billions of dollars of guns to the Saudis. But we can't go to Cuba for vacation anymore. What infuriates me is I don't feel like this presidency has any, there's nothing original. Literally the entire presidency is based on undoing anything President Obama did. And it's disgusting. And I would maybe have a little ounce of respect. They had original ideas or thoughts, but they don't. So it's just frustrating to me because I feel like we are, as Americans, have wasted our time, our money. You know, I was at the beginning, and you know this, when Trump got elected, I said, you know what, he's there. I'm gonna try and give him the benefit of the doubt. And like, maybe he said all this stuff, he wanted all this on his campaign, like, you know, maybe he'll make some changes. He's a business guy, like maybe he can do something. But at this point, we've seen so enough to know that there's no original thoughts going on as far as what we can do to make this country better. Only, what can we do to completely undo Obama's entire era of legislation? I mean, literally, that's it. It's a sham. I hate it.
I just don't understand the Cuba thing. Because I guess my qualm with it is that what I said earlier about Rex Tillerson and that we're not going to base who we work with and deal with on their human rights record.
Yeah.
And now he's saying that we're not going to do business or we're going to roll back traveling and business with Cuba because of their human rights record. A week after doing a billion-dollar deal with the Saudis, like you said, who have a reprehensible human rights record.
I mean, this is just every day for them. It's literally mixed messaging every day. And it's honestly, there's no point. That's what gets me upset. There's no point in trying to figure any of it out. We need to be keeping tabs on what's happening, but like, why run ourselves in a circle trying to figure out why? There's no point. There's no logic. There's no rhyme or reason. It's just happening. And it's just.
And he also is apparently considering, according to Washington Post, that he might fire the special prosecutor or special counsel, Bob Mueller, which I would just like to point out, Saturday Night Massacre by Richard Nixon was when fired the special prosecutor, and then President Nixon's attorney general and deputy attorney general both resigned in protest.
I don't know if we'd get that same reaction this time around.
Well.
But honestly, I...
Neither do I. I'm just saying it would be the most... We've seen the comparisons between President Trump and
Nixon. Yeah, I mean,
but I think that would be so blatantly Nixon-esque, because, and also, what is your reasoning behind that?
Well, you know, I mean, he claims everything's a witch hunt, so.
Look, if it's a witch hunt, then let the investigation
play out.
Right, and then you'll be completely unscathed, and you'll be vindicated.
And, you know, I think Trump has had many years of evading legal confrontations, so you would think he would know at this point in his life and career that if there's something you shouldn't have done, or if you have nothing to hide, you should just let it play out. But I mean, as we all know, when you're guilty, you tend to,
right.
You know, you know where we're going. So.
Right, and I just want to say that as of right now, I think the special counsel's probe is moving to Jared Kushner's financial ties.
Mueller hired 13 new lawyers this week and is looking to hire.
And that doesn't necessarily incriminate anyone.
No, but...
But it's the facts. That's what he did.
Right.
So take that as you will. They are reportedly looking into Jared Kushner's finances. I heard that Paul Manafort is still a big person of interest.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know if this is confirmed. Actually, I'm not going to say it because I don't think it's confirmed. I'll edit that out.
All right.
Is there anything else that they're looking into that I forgot?
No, I think that's it.
Oh, and I think the big story this week was that the president is now being looked into for possible obstruction of justice.
Right, I mean...
And before, as we all heard James Comey say it, by the time James Comey left the FBI, the president was not under investigation, but this beginning some point in the last week, he is now under investigation for obstruction of justice.
Right, which is a really big deal.
And it could be a witch hunt.
It could be. It could be,
but like we said, let it play out if it is, and then you'll be completely vindicated, Mr. President.
Right. Exactly. And they're not back to Comey. They're not releasing his memos to anybody because they're saying it could endanger the investigation. So I think that might also say a lot. And then I think finally...
I'll let you speak on this because I don't know as much about it as you do.
Betsy DeVos?
Yes.
Yeah. So here on our pod, I'm not a fan of Betsy DeVos, and I think a lot of people aren't. And
I think a lot of students are.
Right. As a student in today's... environment. Betsy DeVos announced this week that the Department of Education is going to be repealing and taking away their civil rights investigations. I guess, I don't know if it's a department or they're just not going to be doing it anymore. So this will include different things like students being discriminated against based off of anything, race, gender, sex, anything like that. This means there will no longer be a department assigned to looking into sexual assault allegations on campus, which we know is a huge epidemic. Hopefully one day, maybe our friend Joe Biden.
I'm thinking the same exact.
Yeah, Joe Biden is a huge advocate for the sexual assault on campus, like looking into them and staying on top of that and getting that situation taken care of. It's a huge epidemic in America. And the education department is basically saying to Americans that that's not a priority. And I don't know. I mean, as a woman and as a college student, that makes me feel I'm very upset by this. And, you know, I mean, there's a lot of things going on. I mean, Betsy DeVos also has been criticized lately for saying that schools that discriminate against students would not have any issue with their funding.
To be fair, that's not what she didn't say. That
she didn't cheat. She wouldn't say anything.
I watched the Senate hearing. She was asked repeatedly if schools were found guilty of discriminating against. I think the question in context was about religious schools.
Yeah.
If they were found guilty, or there were allegations of the school discriminating against anyone for gender, race,
religion whatever,
anything. Betsy DeVos essentially just said she repeatedly said over and over again, if those schools receive federal funding, then they have to follow federal law.
Right. That's so, all she said. She would not say if they would be investigated, if it would affect their funding, anything of that sort.
Right. And I mean, that means that if a school doesn't receive federal funding,
They can just do whatever.
That's just very open.
That's what we take away from that. Obviously, not confirmed because she wouldn't say anything else. But that's what people can take away from it. And I just, you know, I'm just, I don't even know what to say on that. just very upset by the whole dealing with that. I mean, it's just saying to students that your safety and your right to an education is not important to our federal government. And that is not American. That's un-American to me. That's, you're denying people, denying someone their safety is denying them the right to their education. Now, obviously discriminating is just flat out denying them the access to that. But you know what I mean? Like, if someone doesn't even feel safe enough to go to school, then what's going to happen? You know, they may drop out. They may not continue. You can affect someone's whole life with this. So again, a big decision basically being made that will affect people on an everyday basis by someone who's never even been to a public school, you know? Just, it bothers me so much.
All right. Well, I think that's about all we have for today.
We are going to be launching a Twitter account.
And a Facebook page.
So we'd like feedback, honestly.
Leave us a good review on iTunes.
Or bad. I mean, honestly, we want to know. We want to know what you
guys think. Or bad. If you hate us, that's fine.
Yeah. So like we said, we're going to try and do this on a weekly basis and let us know what you think.
Well, we have some credits.
All right. Yeah.
I would like to thank Kevin McLeod for giving us this cool intro beat called Acid Trumpet. You can look into his music on incompetech.com, incompetech.com. I'd also like to thank our father for helping to finance this production.
Our first sponsor for Father's Day.
Yes, happy Father's Day to all the fathers. Thank you for being fathers. I said fathers a lot there. Right.
And all right, well, we're going to sign off, and we will hopefully see you next week.
Good afternoon from San Antonio.